Hello, hello, campers. And this is Tales from the Campfire Podcast.
Hello, hello, campers. My name's Keegs. I'm joined by Manny. Say hi, Manny.
What's up?
Kevin will be with us shortly, but his computer's updating and we're recording remotely today. So he'll pop in at some point. Thank you for joining us for this episode. This is going to be Episode 11. Something about the strange, the weird, the highly strange. I don't have the script in front of me.
We're last minute in it.
Yeah, it's ramshackle. Hopefully for the last week. Obviously, last week we didn't have an episode come out because Kevin had COVID and I had throat issues.
Deep throat issues.
Yeah, so tonight we're talking about Elmer McCurdy and the adventures of his corpse.
And his corpse nation. Indoctrination.
Corpse nation? What's that?
I don't know.
I thought that was a reference to something I didn't understand.
It's a nation of corpse.
Yeah, so let's go ahead and, well, first, Manny, how are you doing? How are you, my friend?
I'm alive.
Yeah, that's
happening. I can't say the same for the rest of my family. They're getting close.
They're getting close to what?
To the light.
Oh, about where me and Kevin were like 5 days ago?
Yeah. Everyone's fucking getting sick. Yeah, dude.
It's dumb.
You guys need to have like vitamins and stuff.
You know, I thought I was getting sick, so I took a bunch of emergency and, you know, like started drinking like juice and stuff. And yeah, nothing did it. I don't know. Maybe we need to inject ourselves with your blood because you don't seem to ever get sick when we do. We need your immunities.
It's probably because I can't breathe out of 90% of the time.
You can't so breathe?
Just don't inhale. Yeah.
Yeah, so this week we're going to talk about Elmer McCurdy. We don't have the game this week because we don't have the full crew. We're doing the skeleton crew thing again like last episode. And also, if our audio sounds weird, like I mentioned, we're recording remotely to avoid illness spreading further. Next week, I've said this before, I'll say it again. We'll see how many times it's true. But next week, we should be back to recording in person with the full crew again. No Florida Man this week because we tried to find funny Florida Man, and all we got was brutal, violent, domestic abuse Florida Man for like the past 6 weeks. So no Florida Man this week.
But we do have some news stories from Crypto Zoo News and Crypto Zoosity.
Crypto Zoo.
We'll take a look at those.
Yeah, let's do it. You were going to read the Thunderbird one? Yeah, maybe.
Maybe.
Maybe. Why don't you go ahead and read it, Dan? I want to hit my vape. You read.
So unfortunately, Thunderbird advocate Chief AJ Huffer has died.
No.
December 1937 to May 2022. In 1977, a man named John Huffer took several photos of two large birds taking flight from a tree, although the sightings was mentioned by Discovery Channel on their show Into the Unknown.
Into the birds the unknown. Featured Sorry.
The birds pictured in the photos were dismissed as turkey vultures rather than thunderbirds. There was no lightning. This reality television appearance was linked to the sightings in Lawndale, Illinois' John Huffer, known later as Chief A.J. Huffer, became a well-known advocate of giant crypto birds. Thunderbird sightings have continued into the new millennium. On March 29th, 2022, Chief A.J. Hunter suffered a fall. The doctors discovered a serious infection, and he began a fight for his life on March 30th, 2022, when he passed away. Chief A.J. John Huffer, 84, of Tuscola, Illinois, died with his loving wife, Corrine, nearby at 9:15 a.m. March 30th, 2022, at Sarah Bush Lincoln Health Center, Matteson, Illinois. Chief A.J. was born in Peoria on December 25th in 1937. He was adopted by Charles and Dorothy Boussier Huffer
of
Urbana.
I can't help you. I have no idea where you're at in this article. I think I'm looking at a different one. So
attended the University of Illinois after graduating the Urbana High School in 1955. He joined the Marine Corps after one semester at the, I don't know what UI stands for.
University of, where is he from?
University of Illinois, I guess.
Yes.
I was like,
yeah, that's what it would be because he's in Illinois. Yeah.
Yeah. During his time as a Marine in California, he was a bodybuilder and a level one marksman. After honorable discharge, he returned to the University of Illinois, where he was recruited to be a model for Art Stern students, showing that dick. That's where he met and fell in love with Art student, Corrine Shreve. He had no problem. He had already seen it. They were married on July 26, 1959. They were married 62 years until Corrine's passing on August 17, 2021. AJ is survived by his son, Jason Janice, the Huffer of Waverly, Ohio. Daughter Rebecca Vince Buldoff of Anchorage, Alaska. Grandchildren Benjamin, Burton, Tara, Huffner, Lawrence, and Kawanda, Joy Huffer, and Dodie or Cody. Damn, this guy had a family. Great grandsons Baskian Sky Burton and Noah Lawrence Moshofsky Huffer.
Yeah. Am I here?
Hey,
I guess you're here. What's up, geez. Dude? You made it.
Oh, geez. Yeah,
this thing took like 10 years to update. I turned it on. I'm like, cool, I'm going to get in here real quick. And it just goes, updating. I'm like, oh, shit. It took 6 minutes just to get into Discord right after.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, it's all good. You're here now. I think Manny was just finishing up the first story.
Okay, like I have no idea.
Don't worry about it.
Go up to the show notes tab, and that's where the articles are that we're going to be reading from tonight.
Show notes tab.
Yeah. The chief graduated from Bible College and was inspired to start a boys' home. This brought him back to Tuscola, where they purchased a large home for the boys' home. The boys' home eventually changed to an assisted living home. Then with partners, he opened up We Care Nursing Home and Arcola. Also opened up a hotel restaurant in Arcola and Mattoon. He eventually joined the Carpenters Union in Champaign, Urbana. He later was a contractor and had dinner in the White House with Ronald Reagan as Minority Contractor of the Year. If you want to learn more about Chief AJ's adventures, you can check out the exploits of Chief AJ as told by Chuck Van Gaan.
Oh, man. That was a sexy article.
Oh, it's so long. I just kind of... it's his whole autobiography.
Yeah. I mean, it's cool. He was famous for taking pictures of Thunderbirds. Hopefully they weren't just turkey vultures, because that always seems to be the excuse for Thunderbirds. For anyone that doesn't know, Thunderbird is just a huge bird. It's not supposed to exist, but it runs deep in Native American legend.
Yeah, dude was a fucking murderer, though. He had 4,060 confirmed shots without a miss.
Wow.
He was on the cover of Guns magazine.
Mr. Con Aris, he does sound like a liar. You're right. Anyone that claims to have never missed, probably missed. Because who's going to prove it?
I want to know who recorded this.
Yeah.
Who wrote them down, and whether or not there were other people.
What I want to know is if he was shooting all these 50 people with his arrow slingshot. And also, if he
how big was the target?
If he was this good with a slingshot, or, well, with any weapon, why didn't he just shoot the Thunderbirds when he saw them? You know what I'm saying? All right.
Because they're birds, dude. They fly. He couldn't get close enough.
All right. So moving on to brought to you from Coast to Coast this week. A little article on one of my favorite subjects, UFOs. The article is called Congress to Hold Public Hearing on UFOs. For the first time in over 50 years, Congress is planning to hold an open public hearing concerning the UFO phenomenon next week. The inquiry will reportedly take place on Tuesday, May 17th, under the auspices, of the House
Allspices.
under the Canadian Allspice.
Tell them how to pronounce it, Manny. I know you're good at it. Tell them. Do it. It's your job.
I know what that word is. It's auspicious.
I'm looking at it.
Auspicious? Yeah, auspicious of... No, that can't be right. Whatever. The House of Intelligence...
Mischievous.
House Intelligence Subcommittee on Counterterrorism, Counterintelligence, and Counterproliferation. The hearing will center around the Pentagon's Airborne Object Identification and Management Synchronization Group. Holy shit.
Damn, which was the P-A-O-I-M-S-G.
The POIMS, which was created by the Department of Defense this past November with the purpose of detecting, identifying, and attributing objects of interest in special use airspace. That's a quote. As well as assessing and mitigating, quote, any associated threats of safety or to safety of flight and national security brought about these anomalies. Set to testify at the hearing, which is the first open congressional inquiry since 1968, our Under Secretary of Defense for Intelligence and Security, Ronald S. Moultrie, who heads the newly formed DOD UAP group, and Deputy Director of Naval Intelligence, Scott W. Bray. The duo will be providing an update on the work of the Pentagon's proverbial UFO desk and the issues that it has been assigned to investigate. So these guys are like Mulder and Scully, I guess.
They need to figure it out. Are they going to call them UAPs or UFO?
They're UAPs now.
I know.
WAPs.
WAPs.
The Pentagon's proverbial
wet ass phenomenons.
UFO. Yeah.
You know, with a PH.
WAP.
There's also a USP.
UFP? Is that the unidentified?
No, SP. Submerged.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Which is why they have the Navy
Wet ass phenomenon. Fucking Kevin.
Nailed it.
Let's see. The duo will be providing an update on the work of the Pentagon's proverbial. I read that already. To that end, Representative Adam B. Schiff, I've heard that name, who chairs the House Intelligence Committee. Yeah, I mean, he's a politician, so it might as well be shit with two T's. He told the New York Times that the hearing aims to explore one of the greatest mysteries of our time and break the cycle of excessive secrecy and speculation with truth and transparency. While UFO enthusiasts...
Bullshit.
Right? Well, I mean, it's semi-transparent.
Well, I call it bullshit.
It's like a foggy glass of transparency.
You're kind of like when you just step out of the shower with your wet-ass phenomenon.
While UFO enthusiasts will...
frosted windows.
While the UFO enthusiasts will understandably be following next Tuesday's hearing with considerable interest, they would be wise to temper their expectations, as it is unlikely that the Pentagon officials will reveal that we are being visited by beings from another world. With that said, one hopes that they can shed some light on what the DOD has uncovered regarding the aerial anomalies which have mystified the planet for decades, and, in particular, captivated the country over the last few years, as the government's veil of secrecy surrounding the subject has seemingly been slowly lifted. As always with UFO phenomenon, we are left to wait and see what happens. Although, at least in this case, the hearing is only a week away. So,
the
DOD
dudes.
They do this like twice a year. For anyone that follows UFOs, you'll know that like twice a year, some big news is released about the government or another country's government like looking into the phenomena, and it progresses slowly.
Did you not read the article? It says for the first time in 50 years.
Right. Yeah, so that's what I'm saying is like 3 years ago, it was announced that like the government is openly saying that UFOs exist, but they're changing the name of UFO to UAP.
It's the government, man. The government's behind it all.
Yeah. And then, you know, last year it's like, oh, they're opening the books and they're going to be releasing notes to the public from the Navy and all their reported sightings. And then it was
going to show that centerfold of that WAP.
Yeah. And now it's this, you know, it's just like every year it's like, oh, look at that. They've done one thing. And I understand it's like the government, everything moves like fucking sludge, but you know, maybe eventually they'll actually say something that's worth saying. Sorry, it makes
me neither mad. Confirm nor deny the existence of WAPs.
Yep. Drip drip.
That's usually, you know, how it goes. You know?
Yeah. So I'll keep an eye on this. And maybe next week, let's see. The hearing's supposed to take place next Tuesday, so maybe we'll have some news for you guys on next week's episode in regards to this, but probably not, because like I said, nothing ever happens. Okay.
Yeah, that'll be fine.
Yeah. All right.
They'll be like, there's stuff that we see, and then there's stuff that we don't see.
Look, we're...
If you want to read about it, look at this 40-page book that we wrote with 90% of the words.
Fucking blacked out. Yeah. Redacted. And then he saw it redacted. And Chief Redacted claims that the object that he saw in the redacted was redacted. Yeah. Okay, cool. Thanks for the information.
Yep. They were black. Saw them.
I'll say it.
I think they were Asian.
It's that damn Asian. Putin again. Up to no good, son of a bitch.
Blacked out equal blacked out redacted. Interesting. Interesting. You know, Mr. Con Aris, I'm gonna have to redact that from our stream. Sorry, buddy. Just the interesting part.
It's been redacted.
Yeah, it's been redacted. Kevin, you want to tell us about the strange flying creature by Mr. Izu on cryptozoo-ocity.blogspot.com? I like my sourcing.
That's a good one.
You want to say that again?
Kevin, you want to tell us about
by the first Mr. thing? Izu? By that one?
Yeah, I prefer it's pronounced Izu.
Mr. Magoo, got it.
Yeah. Mr. Pissu. Mr. Wop.
You know a good story always starts with this actually happened.
Right. You know?
Like,
yeah.
Guys, this is gonna be really hard to believe, but this actually happened.
Yeah.
Stupid. This actually happened to my older brother and my grandma in Puerto Rico when I was about 9 years old. He's now 33. My grandparents. He's 9, but he's really 33. He identifies as a small kid, but he's actually 33. My grandparents' house had a lot of land, and it inclines down, so you can't. Don't you mean declines down? Inclines up. So that doesn't make any sense. So would you just be staying in one spot if it inclines down?
This is the reason they can say they used to walk 10 miles
both ways.
Uphill both ways. Yep.
It sounds like Mr. Magoo needs new glasses.
Mr. Gizu, thank you very much.
So if you look at the house from the street level, it's actually still street level. You can see only the top part of the driveway and the roof of the house. Also, the house is near some huge mountains. There's your uphill, which surround Utaro, Utuero, Utido, Tito's, tequila. Got it. Nailed it. So in the back are mountains. Got it. All right. Tito has mountains in his back. One day, my brother was playing on the driveway from where you see the top of the roof, and he looked up because he heard a loud thump. Just like that. When they looked up, my grandma came out at the same time. They looked on top of the roof and saw a short, hairy, dark brown, ape-like thing with wings. Oh, man, whatever they've got over in Puerto Rico. I want some of that.
Ass.
It shook off and flew away into the mountains. To this day, they still don't know what it was, but they think it was a monster from Yunk. Uncle.
The Yunk.
The Yunk. The yeah, sure.
Yunk.
Which is like a rainforest in Puerto Rico where they splice the genes of many animals to create different ones. It is said that that's how the chupacabra was made. They think it escaped from there and hid in the mountains.
And they wanted more gasolina.
So this is a Bigfoot with wings? Is that what I'm taking away?
Yeah, basically.
On his uphill, downhill driveway, he saw a Bigfoot with wings.
Yeah, it's a wop. I'm assuming a winged ape.
It's a wape.
So this is the
wet-ass map.
Kind of like man. A Mothman.
Yeah. It says down here at the bottom, are these creatures some sort of chupacabra or a Mothman-type creature? So, yeah, I think it's neither. I think it's a Bigfoot with wings.
Because yeah, I'm kind of with that.
I mean, it hasn't been done yet, so. Why not?
It's true. It's true.
Yeah. I think Mr. Izu is full of shit.
Mr. Izu.
Or his brother.
Has an issue.
I'm
trying to figure out.
His 9-year-old, 33-year-old brother.
Who the fuck is Izu from Puerto Rico?
What?
Like, is he an Asian Puerto Rican?
Izu can't be a Puerto Rican nationality name.
That's what I'm saying. Is it like an Asian Puerto Rican?
Yes. Mexican American.
Asian Puerto Rican.
Why they like spiced rice.
Everybody likes it. All right.
Oh, boy.
Cool. Let's go ahead and jump into today's main topic, which is Elmer McCurdy. If you've never heard of Elmer McCurdy, I wouldn't be surprised. I didn't hear about him until about two nights ago.
You have heard of his offspring, Jeanette McCurdy, who was on iCarly.
Oh, yeah? Are you a big iCarly fan?
Oh, dude, you know it. Gibby's my favorite.
Gibbs?
Gibby!
Yeah, so we'll get into a little bit of the backstory first, and then we'll get into the many adventures of his fucking corpse. Elmer J. McCurdy was an American bank and train robber who was killed in a shootout with police after robbing a Katy train in Oklahoma in October of 1911. Let's see. He was born in Washington, Maine, which is not confusing at all, on January 1st, 1880. He was the son of 17-year-old Sadie McCurdy, who was unmarried at the time of his birth. The identity of McCurdy's father is unknown. One possibly is Sadie's cousin, Charles Smith. Charles Smith. In order to save Sadie the embarrassment and shame of raising a illegitimate child, her brother George and his wife Helen adopted Elmer. Blah, blah, blah. They died eventually. It was 1800s. They all died of something stupid.
Tuberculosis.
Let's see. Shortly after his grandfather's death, McCurdy...
Tuberculosis.
Arthur. McCurdy left Maine and began drifting around the eastern United States, where he worked as a lead miner and plumber. He was unable to hold a job for an extended period due to his alcoholism. He eventually made his way to Kansas, where he worked as a plumber in Cherryvale. McCurdy then moved to Iola, Kansas, where in 1905 he was arrested for public urination. Intoxication. He then moved to Webb City, Missouri.
Where he had WAP for wet ass pants because he peed himself.
In 1907, McCurdy joined the United States Army. Assigned to Fort Leavenworth, McCurdy was a machine gun operator and was trained to use nitroglycerin for demolition purposes. He was honorably just...
On his machine gun? That doesn't sound safe at all.
He rubbed it all over.
Carry this nitroglycerin and shoot this gun.
You got two jobs and they both go boom when you use them.
Sometimes at the same time.
He was honorably discharged after the quarter or from the quartermaster corps on November 7th, 1910. McCurdy then made his way to St. Joseph, Kansas, where he met with an army friend. On November 19th, McCurdy and his friend were arrested for possessing burglary paraphernalia. Chisels, hacksaws, funnels, gunpowder, blah, blah, blah. Oh, and money sacks.
I wonder if they were like the fucking like burlap sacks with like money symbols on the side.
Like all like the black and white movies always had like the guy with the black makeup over his eyes.
Well, then they absolutely, when they got arrested, were in like black and white striped uniforms, breaking rocks with sledgehammers.
The black Robin mask with the striped shirt as they're robbing people.
And like a little Frenchman's hat. What are those called?
Yeah.
Beret.
Or beret.
Yeah. The St. Joseph Gazette reported that during their arraignment, McCurdy and his friend told the judge the tools were not intended for burglary purposes, but were tools they needed for work on a foot-operated machine gun they were inventing. In 1911, a jury found McCurdy not guilty. After his release from county jail, McCurdy's short-lived career as a bank and train robber began. His robberies were generally bungled affairs due to McCurdy's ineptitude. We're going to go ahead and skip over his crimes. It's basically just
him trying to rob shit.
Yeah, and not being super successful. Maybe successful sometimes. There is one thing. Let's see. In 1911, he tried to rob a bank in Chattawaka.
Nice.
Chattanooga, Kansas. He couldn't get through, so he tried to blow the safe door with nitroglycerin, but it failed to ignite, which was literally his like only job he's ever had was working with nitroglycerin, and he fucked it up.
How does nitroglycerin not just fucking it?
I know that's the weird thing. Nitroglycerin is like highly volatile. Like he could have thrown a rock at it and would have ignited.
That must have been a stressful few minutes of like holding the bottle of nitroglycerin as he's trying to get in there.
Yeah, right in the middle of a bank robbery. Yeah. Let's see. Kevin or Manny. Let's go with Manny on this one. Manny, do you want to read the section about his death?
Sure. McCurdy's final robbery took place in October 1911 near Okesha, Oklahoma. McCurdy and two accomplices planned to rob a Katy train after hearing that it contained $400,000 in cash, that it was intended as a royal payment to the Osage Nation. However, McCurdy and the men mistakenly stopped a passenger train, number 29. The men were able to steal only $46 in mail checks, two demijohns of whiskey, a revolver, a coat, and the train conductor's watch. Newspaper's account of the robbery later called it one of the smallest in history. That's what she said.
You and me both, McCurdy. You and me both.
McCurdy was also disappointed by the haul and returned to Revard's Ranch on October 6th, where he began drinking the demijohns of whiskey he stole. By this time, he was also ill with the tuberculosis.
Oh, it's hard to say.
Working mines with a mild case of pneumonia and the trichinosis, he stayed up drinking with some of the ranch hands before going to sleep in the hayloft the following morning. Unbeknownst to McCurdy, he had been implicated in the robbery, and a $2,000 reward for his capture was issued. In the early mornings of October 7th, a posse of three sheriffs, brothers Bob and Stringer, Fenton, and Dick Wallace, tracked McCurdy to the shed using bloodhounds. They surrounded the hay shed and waited till daylight. In an interview featured in the October cover, he turned his attention to Dick Wallace. He kept shooting at all of us for about an hour. We fired back every time we could. We don't know who killed him. We found one of the jugs of whiskey, which was taken from the train. It was about empty. He was pretty drunk when he rode up to the ranch last night. McCurdy was killed by a single gunshot wound to the chest, which he sustained while lying down. What?
This is all right, sure. This is the most Western slapstick shit I can think of. Like, Well, the brother...
He was trying to ground and ricocheted off of something and hit him in the chest.
Well, brothers Bob, Stringer, and Dick...
Dick Waller.
Tracked down old Elmer, and when they found him, they shot at him. And when they came upon his body, they shot him again in the chest. He was drinking from one of the whiskey jugs he had stolen from the train earlier that day. Like, it sounds made up.
But, yeah.
Let's see.
You're up post-mortem.
Yeah, Kevin, you want to read the first two sections of the post-mortem, and then we'll switch out again.
Sure, why not? McCurdy's body was taken to the undertaker in Pawhuska, Oklahoma, where it went unclaimed. Joseph L. Johnson, you can see he was named after a gift, I'm guessing. The owner and undertaker embalmed the body with arsenic-based preservatives typically used in embalming in that era to preserve a body. Jeez, I would have no idea that when you said he embalmed the body and said it was arsenic, that you'd have to explain it to me one more time just to get the point across. Good old Wikipedia. Dumbass. For long periods of times when no next of kin were known. He then shaved the face, dressed the body in a suit, and stored it in the back of the funeral home. As McCurdy lay unclaimed, Johnson refused to bury or release the body until it was paid for. Until his services were paid for, basically. He's just like, oh, I friggin' embalmed him and used all my stuff on him, but you guys, I'm not going to give this one a free one, you know?
I want my 10 cents, goddammit.
I want my damn sarsaparilla and ain't nobody gonna get me.
Could have given me that bottle of whiskey for his body, but no, he had to drink it.
Sarsaparilla for life. Straight edge cowboy. Johnson then decided to exhibit McCurdy to make money. He dressed the corpse in street clothes, placed a rifle in his hands, and stood it up in the corner of the funeral home. For a nickel, Johnson would allow visitors to see the bandit who wouldn't give up. At various times, McCurdy also called the mystery man of many aliases. The bandit became a popular attraction at the funeral home and drew attention of carnival promoters. John received numerous offers to sell McCurdy's corpse, but refused. On October 6, 1916, a man calling himself Aver contacted Joseph Johnson, claiming to be Elmer McCurdy's long-lost brother from California. Aver had already contacted the Osage County, Oklahoma, sheriff and a local attorney to get permission to take custody of the body and ship it to San Francisco for a proper burial. The following... Aver arrived at Johnson's funeral home with another man calling himself Wayne, who also claimed to be McCurdy's brother. Johnson released the body to the men, who then put it on a train. Ostensibly to San Francisco. Okay. It was I have no idea what ostensibly.
Yeah, you got
ostensibly.
It.
I don't even know what the fuck that means. It was instead shipped to Arkansas City, Kansas. The men who claimed to be McCurdy's long-lost brothers were, in fact, James and Charles Patterson. James Patterson was the owner of the Great Patterson Carnival Show, a traveling carnival. After learning from his brother Charles about the popular embalmed bandit exhibit, the two... concocted a scheme to take possession of the body in order to feature it in Patterson's carnival. McCurdy's corpse would be featured in Patterson's traveling carnival as the outlaw who would never be captured alive until 1922, when Patterson sold his operation to Louis Sonny.
Ostensibly is like purportedly or apparently. But
why don't you just say apparently?
Right, but it means like it probably didn't happen, but that's what they said happened. Mm. So if anyone's not keeping track, by the time these guys showed up and claimed to be his brother and they wanted to bury him, He had been sitting in this window of the shop for 5 years, his corpse. It wasn't like a month later, like 5 years later, these guys showed up and were like, yeah, that's our brother.
Come on, come out for a nickel. Join me and see the Oklahoma Outlaw here at Johnson's Memorial Facility. Just give me a nickel and I'll let you see this dang good, well-preserved body of the embalmed bandit.
Give me
a nickel. I know you want to go see it. You want to see this thing. Give me a nickel, give that corpse a tickle, you know what I'm saying? You know, go ahead and keep his pants up, though. But go ahead and take a picture of his toes if you want. Gotta look him real good, nice and tall, big old legs and shit, you know. Go ahead and take a picture with him. And if you have a camera, then I'm going to say it's $2 for you because cameras back then were really expensive.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
If you give me a nickel and a penny, I'll give you a shot of whiskey.
Well, give me two nickels. You can crack nuts with his mouth and you can play the bongos on his drums. Or the drums on his ribs.
The bongos on his drum ribs.
And crack nuts with the mouth.
Go ahead and fluff his pillow if you want.
You can use him for a pillow if you give me enough money. Not very comfortable.
Take him out on a date if you want. Got all the taste still.
He's a mighty good kisser, I know from experience.
I'll tell you what, if you can reach into his pocket and find the pickle, you get a stay for free.
Believe it or not,
the pickle's been in there longer. You can go and enjoy the monkeys and elephants on me.
All right. Let's see. Louis Sonny used McCurdy's corpse in his traveling museum of crime, which featured let's see. So Louis Sonny used McCurdy's corpse in his traveling museum of crime, which featured wax replicas of famous outlaws such as Bill Doolin and Jesse James. In 1928, the corpse was part of the official sideshow that accompanied the Trans-American Foot Race. In 1933, it was acquired for a time by director Dwayne Esper to promote his exploitation film, Narcotic. The corpse was placed in the lobby of theaters as a dead dope fiend, whom Esper claimed had killed himself while surrounded by police after he had robbed a drugstore to support his habit. By the time Esper acquired McCurdy's body, it had become mummified. The skin had become hard and shriveled, causing the body to shrink. Esper claimed the skin's deterioration was proof of the supposed dope fiend's drug abuse. So what I take from that is they were putting on shows and they would take this guy's corpse and just like throw it somewhere in the audience and like be like, see, it's a dope fiend. Don't do dope. Don't do the heroines. Stay away from the Asians who sell the heroines. It's 1930s. Everyone's racist. after Louis Sonny died in 1949, the corpse was placed in storage in a Los Angeles warehouse. In 1999, lead man of a band, his name was Fred Durst, ended up with the body and actually put it on stage with him and would dance around and sing into the man's mouth. From there, Fred Durst was eventually replaced by the dead man because he actually was a better frontman for the band Limp Bizkit. I skipped some stuff. In 1964, Sonny's son Dan lent the corpse to the filmmaker David F. Friedman. It eventually made a brief appearance in Friedman's 1967 film, She Freak. In 1968, Dan Sonny sold the body along with other wax figures for $10,000 to Spoonie Singh, the owner of the Hollywood Wax Museum. Singh had bought the figures for two Canadian men who exhibited them at a show at Mount Rushmore. While being exhibited there, the corpse sustained some damage in a windstorm. The tips of the ears, along with fingers and toes, were blown off. The men eventually returned the corpse back to Singh, who decided that it looked too gruesome and not lifelike enough to exhibit. Singh then sold it to Ed Liersch, part of the Pike, an amusement zone in Long Beach, California. By 1976, McCurdy's corpse was hanging in the laugh in the Dark Funhouse expedition at the Pike. They don't explicitly say it in here, but at some point, people stopped realizing this was an actual person. They just thought it was like a prop. He was so mummified that he didn't even look real anymore.
Nice.
Yeah. So, like, how he looked too gruesome and not lifelike at all to exhibit. It's kind of funny because, you know, it's kind of the definition of lifelike.
Right.
Yeah, so this is where we're going to kind of get into the fucked up part of it. Manny, if you want to read this.
Sure. On December 8th, 1976, the production crew of a television show called The $6 Million Man was filming scenes for the Carnival of Spies episode in Long Beach, California at Pike. During the shoot, a prop man moved what was thought to be a wax mannequin that was hanging from the gallows. When the mannequin's arm broke off, a human bone and a muscle tissue were visible. Police were called and the mummified corpse was taken to Los Angeles coroner's office on December 9th. Dr. Joseph Choi conducted an autopsy and determined that the body was that of a human male who died of a gunshot wound to the chest. The body was completely petrified, covered in wax, and had been covered with layers of phosphorus paint. It weighed approximately 50 pounds and was 63 inches in height. Some hair was still visible on the sides and back of the head, while the ears, big toes, and fingers were missing. The examination also revealed incisions from the original autopsy and embalming. Tests conducted on the tissue showed the presence of arsenic, which was a component of embalming fluid in the 1920s. Tests also revealed tuberculosis in the lungs, which McCurdy had developed while working as a miner. Bunions and scars that McCurdy documented to have had, while the bullet that caused the fatal wound was presumably removed during the original autopsy. The bullet jacket was found. It was determined to be a gas check, which were first used in 1905 until 1940. These clues helped investigators pinpoint the era in which the man had been killed. Further clues to the man's identity were found when the mandible was removed for dental analysis. Inside the mouth was a 1924 penny and a ticket stub to the 140 West Pike Sideshow and Louis Sonny's Museum of Crime. Investigators contacted Dan Sonny, who confirmed that the body was Elmer McCurdy, forensic anthropologist Dr. Clyde Snow was then called in to help make a positive identification. Dr. Snow took radiographs of the skull and placed them over the photo of McCurdy at the time to his death in a process called superimposition. They superimposed me, man. Snow was able to determine that the skull was that of, in fact, Elmer McCurdy. By December 11th, the story of McCurdy's journey had featured in newspapers and on television and radio. Several funeral homes called the coroner's office, offering to bury McCurdy free of charge, but officials decided to wait to see if any living relatives would come forward to claim the body. Fred Olds, who represented the Indian Territory Posse of Oklahoma Westerns, eventually convinced Dr. Thomas No Noguchi, then the chief medical examiner coroner for the county of Los Angeles, to allow him to bury the body in Oklahoma. After further testing to ensure proper identification, Olds was allowed to take custody of the body. On April 22nd, 1977, the funeral procession was conducted to transport McCurdy the Boot Hill section of Summit View Cemetery in Gurthy, Oklahoma. A graveside service attended by approximately 300 people was conducted after McCurdy was buried next to another outlaw, Bill Dillon, to ensure that McCurdy's body would not be stolen. 2 feet of concrete were poured over the casket, sealing him forever in a tomb of rock hard concrete.
Oh, wait, I forgot my wallet in his casket.
Hey, Steve, have you seen my watch?
I swear I took my timepiece back out when I was done. Why we put chains on things? Wallets, yeah. Dogs, women.
So that's good old Elmer McCurdy. I found out about that through a little show called Ghost Adventures, where
furry night tales.
Mm-hmm. They thought that he was haunting the house that he was buried next to, I think. I don't know. I don't really pay attention a whole lot when those episodes are on. I just watch for like the great B-roll stuff in it.
Just want to see Zach Baggins. Yeah. Butt and biceps and tight shirts and pants.
Oh, yeah. You know it. And the way that he always goes, like, I'm putting a mask on because I have asthma. Like, I'm pretty sure COVID
was the best thing. I'm going to send Aaron in because I'm too much of a bitch.
He always fucks Aaron over. Hey, Zach.
You're on, like, season 12. We know you have asthma.
He's on fucking season 20. But I think COVID was a good thing for him because now he doesn't have to explain it anymore.
And everyone's like, oh my gosh, look at him. He's still wearing a mask. How great.
Make him even more of a douche. Even more.
Just something to add on. If anyone doesn't know and wants to know, mummy powder is a thing you can find out about.
Is that cocaine for mummies?
Nope. Apparently,
I also found out that slut dust is a real thing too.
What is that?
It's seasoning for food. If we're talking about mummy powder, I gotta bring up slut dust.
Okay, just don't explain what it is at all. Just say it. We're waiting for.
I just said it was. It's food seasoning.
Right, but like,
yeah,
is it spicy?
Dude, it has a bunch of different flavors. It's just the name of the brand.
They got
a bunch of stuff. Yeah, that's why I can't really just explain one.
Mm. Okay, cool.
That's what they put it on there if you ask them to make it slutty.
That's it, man.
I'm not going to really read to you guys about mummy powder. Just look it up. And people really believe that there's healing properties if you like grind up mummy skin and, I don't know, snort it or rail it or whatever.
Rub it on the slong.
Yeah. Make it big. So you guys, you got anything? Kevin, you were late. How are you? How are you feeling?
I'm better. I'm just, you know, running late because I was making myself and my beautiful fiance some dinner.
Okay.
Bloody hamburgers.
It was actually salmon burgers.
Ooh.
Yeah. Slutty salmon.
Yeah, there we go. Slutty salmon.
I guess I was more referring to how are you feeling because you had COVID?
I can taste again.
Oh, that's good.
Which is awesome. I still have like a lingering cough, but other than that, I'm pretty good.
Good.
I'm all right. I'm all right. Yeah. You know, with the healing powers of three cats, anything is possible.
Yeah. good old cat dander is great for you. I think Manny asked if you can smell. Is your smelling back?
Yeah, everything's back.
Good. Good.
Everything is back.
Yeah. How do you know?
Because I can smell it. I tasted what I was eating.
But, like, how do you know that's what it's supposed to smell
like? I mean, everything smells like burnt toast now.
Yeah. Anybody else smell burning feathers? Yeah, no, I'm good. Yeah. Good. I'm feeling much better. Good. So, yeah.
My throat still hurts. I don't know what's living in my throat. I mean, my voice finally came back, but there's something living in there. And I'm just,
I think I'm going to have to learn. Is that white and milky?
It's a wet ass phenomena.
It's a wet ass phenomena on my throat. That's for sure. Big shout out to Miss Ashley, friend of the show, Miss Ashley, not my wife, but the other one. Who made us gifts that we were supposed to open.
We still having.
We were supposed to open over a month ago live during our show recording, and we have yet to do it because, you know.
We've been sick.
Like.
Moving, concert, sick. Well, you know, whatever the week, whatever the flavor of the week bullshit there is.
Right.
But, yeah, hopefully. As I think I was saying this before you got on, Kevin, but, you know, I've said it before. I'll probably say it again. Hopefully next week we can get back to in-person recordings, get that sound quality back. Yeah. I can see your guys' beautiful faces again.
I wouldn't say beautiful.
Beautiful to someone, and that someone is me.
I appreciate it.
And get all of our ladies together to do the behind the scenes stuff again, or at least together in spirit.
Patreon.
Yeah, and we need to get another Patreon episode up. We're not gonna have time to record it tonight, unfortunately. No. This is gonna be another short episode, but next week we will have a good old spooky episode with all the themes again, and we'll do our Patreon episode again. So that's the plan. Yeah. As long as I don't know what else could happen at this point. Fucking one of us dies.
It's like it's about where it's at.
Yeah. It's
aliens.
Yeah. Yeah. Aliens. That's what I'm guessing.
Aliens.
Maybe during that meeting that they're going to have with the government next week, they're going to just fuck everything up.
Yep.
But
probably.
Yeah, next week we're definitely going to try it for you guys. We will we'll get back on track with this, and episode 12 is going to be a good one. But you know what? This was too. This is a good episode. Short, sweet. Elmer McCurdy, the mummy.
If you call an hour short, I mean
Bubba Hotep.
Bubba Hotep.
Bubba Hotep.
You know, I thought, Kevin, you would appreciate my Limp Bizkit reference in there.
And I did. Okay. I did. That's pretty good. I was laughing.
I pretty much just felt like Manny go, okay, that was weird. But I was, yeah, we've been in a Limp Bizkit rag mood all week.
Give me something to bring.
Have you guys seen the videos of them live lately?
No.
No.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Talk about dad bod situation.
Oh man, I'm gonna have to look it up after we're done.
Well, to be fair, all of their fans from 1999 are now dad bod enthusiasts.
Yeah, but they didn't even keep up like the look or anything. Like,
no,
they just literally, I saw one, they were like main performance at some sort of bar, and he was literally wearing like jeans and a polo shirt with like a LA hat.
That sounds like Limp Bizkit, though. I mean,
yeah, it does. It kind of sounds like what he normally does.
Yeah.
No.
So we usually wear Dickies, but, so know, he's switched over like, to jeans now.
Yeah, but you know, he's like normally like in a jogger suit or
wearing some big old Etney shoes.
Yeah, like an Adidas full jumpsuit, something like that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. We got on the subject because I watched a documentary about Woodstock 99 and how the documentary was about the entire event, but there was a whole part of it dedicated to the fact that Limp Bizkit incited a riot during the performance, and they were surprised. The people that put on the show were like, this is like Woodstock. It's supposed to be peace and love. And it's like, why the fuck did you invite Limp Bizkit and Korn to play then? Like, what did you think was going to happen? It's Fred Durst.
Like asking, like ABC asking, you know, Rage Against the Machine to do a live broadcast without cussing.
Right.
Wait, that actually did happen. And Rage Against the Machine, they started screaming the F-bomb.
Did it happen? I've never heard of that.
It did. It was really funny.
There was also, what was it, Rage Against the Machine on Saturday Night Live, where they're like, don't make it political. And they're like, do you know who we are? Fuck.
You've already fucked up because you told us not to do something. We're anti that.
Yeah.
Fuck you, I won't do what you tell me.
Well, yeah, and it's that whole Woodstock 99 literally thing. You know, people were like setting equipment on fire in the audience. There's like 300,000 people starting bonfires in the audience, and they tell the Red Hot Chili Peppers to ask the audience to put the fires out and stop lighting things on fire. So they started playing, what's that song, Fire by Jimi Hendrix? Like,
let me stand next to your fire.
Yeah, they just started playing that like super loud, and everyone just started lighting everything on fire. It's like, it's Red Hot Chili Peppers. You don't just tell them not to do something.
It's fucking Woodstock? I thought this was Burning Man.
Well, that man over there is burning, so I guess we're in the right place.
It's like what me and Kevin were talking about. Like, oh yeah, Fred Durst, you know, he's like the Cat Stevens or like the Carpenters of our time. He needs to play at this peaceful event. Give me something to break. Fucking stupid. But anyways, this is a good documentary. Yeah. So if you guys don't have anything to add, we can go ahead and wrap this baby up.
Let's wrap it up and stand it up in the corner of our funeral home.
All right, let's see if I got the right outro here.
Far from the campfire, there are things in the woods watching you, waiting for you to come into the dark.
Yay, we did it.
Ooh.
Thank you.
It has and shall be done.